Run DNA has an extensive range of running and walking footwear. They're trusted by podiatrists and physiotherapists. The Run DNA fitter's advice is second to none. Pop into Run DNA, 20 Manton Street, Hindmarsh, or 391 Fullerton Road, Fullerton. They're open 7 days, plenty of off-street parking. If you walk or run, you need to Run DNA.
Welcome to Hooked on Sport. This is South Australia's weekly sports wrap, where we uncover the stories, personalities and moments that define sport across South Australia. It's time for Hooked on Sport with two-time Bradman medalist Ben Hook and state golf representative Sophie Hilditch.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Hooked on Sport, the only podcast with a laser focus on South Australian sport from the greats to the grassroots. I'm Ben Hook, and if there is anyone more passionate about the SA sporting community, then it is my co-host, Sophie Hilditch. Soph, good evening.
Good evening, Hookie. How are you going?
I'm going all right. We've had some challenges. We'll get to them because we have had a conversation with a superstar Olympian, and we had some very big concerns over whether it actually recorded, but we think we've solved it, haven't we?
Oh, look, fingers crossed. I'm not overly confident, but I think we got it down packed in the end, and she was a great champ in that as well.
We'll talk about her later. We're missing Wallace tonight. We're literally playing a game of Where's Wally? We are all mates. He's actually off playing in the senior state amateur golf tournament at the moment, so he's down in Narracourt. So we wish him all the very best. I think he played pretty well yesterday, tougher today. We'll welcome him back next week.
Yeah, we're definitely wishing him all the best. Cannot wait to hear how he's going on that golf course. I'm a bit worried though, Hookie. We're not supervised tonight. That's a bit scary.
It is scary. I tell you what, I feel a bit sorry for Wallace because we're going to send him this link and he's going to spend about 17 hours tomorrow editing out ums and ahs and, oh, geez, I stuffed that up. He's just going to have to deal with it. It'll be a lot of fun for him. Hey, are you nervous about Thursday night? Of course, it's Crows and Collingwood. How are you feeling?
Look, I'm feeling pretty good, Hookie. Am I nervous? 100% I'm nervous. We're finally at the finals and we've got Collingwood. I think it's going to be a huge game and I cannot wait for it. But importantly, Taylor Walker's 300th game. How exciting.
It is tremendously exciting. Glad you picked that up. Alex Neil-Bullen is playing his 200th game as well. So some big milestones for the Adelaide Football Club. I don't know that I love big milestones in big games. I think you can get a little bit overstimulated with those sorts of things. But Taylor Walker, look, I'm a mate of Taylor, so I'm going to give a biased opinion here, but I'm interested in your thoughts. Taylor Walker, his influence on the Adelaide Football Club and AFL in general, just off the top of your head, your thoughts.
Yeah, look, I think Tex is incredible for the Crows. He's an all-time goal kicker with 678 majors since his debut in 2009, I think, and oh, isn't good. That just an incredible stat? But look, I think he's a great role model for the club. He's gone through ups and downs. He's gone from being a bachelor when he first started to a husband to a father with the Crows. He's a proud South Australian boy, and I cannot wait to celebrate his 300th game. I think it's well-deserved, well-earned, and I think he is a true inspiration for the Crows.
Fifth player from the Adelaide Football Club to reach 300 games, Rashudo McLeod Goodwin Edwards. I mean, that's an illustrious list. I've actually got him at three. I think I've got Rashudo and McLeod ahead of him, Goodwin and Edwards behind him. I just think about what he has been through at the Adelaide Football Club. So he's the captain of the football club in 2015 and his coach dies the day before a game. I mean, as the captain of a football club, the responsibility he had to take, he had to bear upon his shoulders. This was a coach, Phil Walsh, that he absolutely adored. And the Crows still went on and played and won a final that year. It was quite incredible. I think he stood down at the right time at the end of 2018 when the wheels had started to fall off the club. I think he understood that it was the right time for some new leadership. I remember watching him in 2020. So that was the COVID year. They were playing up in the Gold Coast a lot. Adelaide were really struggling. They finished bottom that year. And I'm looking at Tex going, I don't think he's going to play maybe one more year at tops. And so here we are at the end of 2025. He'll play his 300th game. And I think it's entirely his decision whether he plays in 2026. It is incredible, his longevity, the way he has reinvented himself from the key forward to a guy who is a high half forward, third guy in the team, and just allowing Darcy Fogarty and Riley Filthorpe to do the work. Mm-hmm. It has been an incredible career, and I do kind of, completely biased again, hope that it finishes one way or another with an AFL premiership, because I think that not everyone gets what they deserve, but he would richly deserve an AFL premiership. He's been an incredible footballer for the Adelaide Football Club and for this town for a long period of time. Mm-hmm.
No, 100% agree, Hookie.
Your tip for Thursday night, Soph, Crows versus Collingwood. What do you think?
Look, I've got to go Crows, Hookie. It's a home game. The crowd is going to be huge. Bit of controversy this week with the sold out of the members allocation. I think it was only within an hour. It was crazy. But no doubt that crowd is going to be electric, and I reckon that's going to push our boys over the line.
I find it hard to disagree. I do think Adelaide probably only just. Gee, it's been a funny week, Soph. The best season for the football club in 8 years, directly after what I think has probably been their most disappointing 2024, when they expected to play finals and they finished bottom four. I've got to love the chair, John Olsen, former Premier of South Australia. You can take the man out of politics, but you can't take the politics out of the man, can you? When Adelaide was going rough last year, where was he? He was nowhere to be seen. It was Tim Silvers who was taking every single bullet. And I was just delighted to see John Olsen, who I love. I love hearing him speak. I think he is a wonderful orator. He can put together a sentence so well. But he's doing three-part series for the Advertiser this week when they finished with the minor premiership. So just thought that was absolutely beautiful that Tim Silvers was front and centre when everything was going absolutely pear-shaped last year. Is Tim Silvers still even the CEO of the club? Because I have not seen him bob his head up at one opportunity now that they're going well. So I thought that was pretty fascinating. Look, I think Adelaide win. I think Rankin's a loss, and Rochelle obviously would have been handy, and it looks like he won't get up in time for the qualifying final. Max Michelani, I've got to tell you this story because I think this is amazing. Max Michelani came to the Adelaide Football Club as a father-son. His dad, Jim Michelani, played for Norwood, played in four premierships. The first of them was in 1975, so they had the 50-year anniversary this year. He was a 19-year-old. He was brought in by Bob Hammond and went on and played in that 1975 grand final victory over Glenelg. That was on the 27th of September 2025. If Max Michelani goes on to play in the grand final, his first grand final for the Adelaide Crows, guess what date that will be? Now, don't guess, because I'll just tell you. The 27th of September 2025, 50 years to the day since his dad played in that SANFL premiership for Norwood, and he got there on the strength of being a father-son of his dad. So that would be that's absolute X-File stuff, I reckon.
Yeah, no, that's an incredible story. Well, talking about the SANFL, do you want to give us a little bit of a wrap from the weekend just been?
Two cracking games. Norwood have got over Central District, I think it was by 18 points. Glenelg have beaten the Adelaide Crows by 1 point. There were 9 league changes across the two games, so they were absolute thrillers. I mean, the SANFL is in rude health at the moment. We've had a discussion about a couple of things that I thought maybe they could do to improve it, but it's going pretty well. I've got to be honest, I loved what I saw between the elimination final and the qualifying final on the weekend. I think we probably had the right winners. I think Norwood have come in with very, very good form in the back half of the year. They started slowly, but here they are now with a crack in a first semi-final. And that was just a wonderful game, Glenelg versus Crows. And even though the Crows have lost and they've now got to come through the first semi-final themselves, they'll be playing against Norwood. I don't rule them out for the flag whatsoever. I just want to make this point. Look, so if I watched a lot of SANFL football in the 80s. It's a generation before you were even born, but I remember some of the legendary coaches of that era. John Cale was coaching. It was the back end of, John Cale was coaching. Neil Baum was coaching. It was just a legendary time in South Australian football with all of these champion coaches. Marty Matner, two flags. Darren Reeves, two flags. Jade Sheedy, two flags. And then Matt Wright, of course, he's the best resource state league coach in the competition. That's patently obvious. So, yeah, I think it is just incredible the quality of coaching we've got. Josh Franco was going to be coaching in the SNFL next year. All three of those coaches that I just listed who are now in the running for a third premiership title are back-to-back winners of an SNFL title. So, you know, I think back through the SNFL, Bob Hammond, Neil Baum, Graham Corns, Nathan Bassett, all of these guys are two-time premiership coaches. It's not a bad record. And these guys, one of these guys is going to be a three-time premiership coach unless it's the Crows and Matthew Wright. So, yeah, amazing. The McGarry Medal is on now. I'm going to give you a result for that. Not that that matters too much because by the time people are listening to this, it's everything ever is going to be right across it. But, yeah, it's been a wonderful weekend for the SNFL in the sweet spot where the AFL decides to take a week off. And I think we're going to have three more wonderful, wonderful weeks. We've got some other news to get through. Tell me about what is going on in South Australian hockey right now, because there's some big names that are playing some big games.
Yeah, some huge names, Hookie. So obviously the Hockey SA, they're in the middle of their Premier League finals at the moment. But the big news is Hattie Shand and Lucy Sharman have both been selected to represent Australia at the 2025 Oceania Cup in Darwin to be held this week, 4th to 7th of September. How exciting is that, Hookie?
Yeah, it is incredible. I'm a big fan of Hattie Shand. She's been in the system for a long time. Lucy Sharman, relatively new. I've got to make this point, and you're a hockey kid, so you'll know this better than me. If you're a country kid, it seems like you know your way around a hockey pitch better than anyone. So if you go through women's hockey in particular, the last five South Australians to have played for the Hockey Roos, Jane Claxton is the odd one out. She's our most capped hockey roo out of South Australia now, but she's a city kid. Here's the next four. Hattie Shand from Narracourt, Lucy Sharman from Kalangadu, so both in the southeast of South Australia, Georgie Parker and Carrie McMahon, both from the Riverland. And then if we flip our attention across to the Kookaburras, the last Kookaburra to play for South Australia is from out of South Australia is Tom Wickham, who came from Wakeree. So I tell you what, if you're a country kid and you want to go to the Olympic Games, start playing some hockey on those rough pitches, those grass, dirt, whatever it is, pitches that you play on, because that seems to be the great pathway through to being representing Australia in either the Hockey Roos or the Kookaburras.
Oh, that's an interesting connection, Hookie. I hadn't actually ever thought about that one. So you've upsmarted me there, that's for sure.
Haven't upsmarted you at all, but it's just because I'm old, Soph, and I remember back to these things. In fact, I did a wonderful story with Georgie Parker, who's an absolute media star. She's doing the US Open coverage for the free-to-air broadcaster. But I did a story with her and Carrie McMahon holding hockey sticks with berry oranges on them, just as a bit of a representation of where they're from. Good fun. Let's talk about some other things. Can I just share with you the story of the downfall of the West Adelaide Soccer Club in the Women's National Premier League competition? It is a downfall perhaps unlike any other I've seen in South Australian sport. They got to the end of the minor round competition, Soph, 18-game season, so 10 in the competition. They'd won 15 and drawn 3, had not lost a game for the year. 1-15, drawn 3. They went into the second semi-final against the Adelaide Cobras and they were 1-0 up and they blew it and lost 3-1. But they got the double chance, no drama. So they would play Campbelltown City. Now, Campbelltown City were promoted from the State League competition last year. They fell in by a point into the top five. They went 7 wins, 2 draws and 9 losses. I mean, just do the maths against a side that's undefeated for the entire year. And so there they are playing in the preliminary final. Campbelltown City were one down after, I think West Adelaide scored in about the 60th minute. Campbelltown City equalised in the 74th minute, I think it was, and then in the 92nd minute put the winner in. and West Adelaide Soccer Club, who've won the cup, won the minor premiership, and have been bounced out in straight sets with two losses, having not lost for the year. I mean, that is one of the all-time devastating stories. So we really feel for West Adelaide, who did so much right this year. But that's our finals work, isn't it, Soph?
Yeah, it always comes down to finals, unfortunately, Hooky. I mean, incredible seasons. So that one's got to hurt for them. But, I mean, that's finals, isn't it?
Quick story out of country footy. You, Soph, you know that I'm a big fan of country footy. I want to give a big congratulations to Craig Stewie Walker, who has played his 400th game of footy for Murrayville Football Club. Murrayville is actually a Victorian football club, so we should probably just rule it out straight away, because once it gets outside the South Australian border, Soph, we don't like to talk about it. But they play in the Murray Valley Football League. They're the only Victorian team that plays in the South Australian League. And they have done for many, many years. They actually played in the Mallee League. I'll wheel back to that. But I just want to share with you the story about Craig Walker, Stewie Walker, 400th game. He plays alongside his son, Dylan. And these guys are playing A grade. So this isn't like he's just running around in the C grade, getting a kick against all the old dudes and the young kids who are 14, 15. Because in the Murray Valley competition, each team only has one grade. So this is the former Riverland Independent competition. There's a whole host of things in that region that changed at the end of 2022. The Mallee League disbanded completely, of which Murrayville was one of those teams. Murrayville were the Bulldogs, and they played in the Riverland Independent League. But then Caroonah and Peak District merged, and they went to the River Murray League, and that set the wheels in motion for the disbandment of the Mallee League. They went to what was the Riverland Independent League, which became the Murray Valley League, had to lose a team, lost their B-grade team, and had to go from the Bulldogs to what is essentially like a Carlton Blues Guernsey. And I just think to myself, imagine if you or I were involved in a community club and just got told, oh, well, through no fault of your own, your league is disbanding, you've got to go and play a completely different bunch of teams, you're not allowed to have a B grade, and you've got to change your team colours and your team logo and emblem. I mean, we're city kids who just don't really have to experience that, and that's what Murrayville have went through. So for Craig Stewie Walker, in and amongst all of that, to play 400 games, I just reckon that is an incredible story. A bit down the road in the KNTFL League, so that's Carrie Naracoorte, Tatiara. Lucendale took on Keith in the qualifying final. Lucendale, the second team, Keith, the third team. Lucendale were leading by 32 points at quarter time. They were leading by 39 points at halftime. They were leading by 37 points at three quarter time, Soph. Mm-hmm. So you would have thought Lucendale went on and won that one pretty comfortably?
You'd think so.
Keith kicked 7-4. To 0-4 in the final term and won by 5 points. So what an amazing result that is. Lucendale versus Keith. Oh, before I forget about it, Soph, I want to put to you, without notice, a message we got from Gordon Anderson this week. Great mate of mine, Gordon Anderson, very heavily involved in the Glenelg Football Club, took, I reckon, what is maybe the best SNFL photo ever. There was a game between Glenelg and Central District, I think it was, where the two captains came to the middle before the game for the toss of the coin. No umpire had remembered to bring a coin, so the two captains had to go paper, rock, scissors, and he got the perfect photo, which he shared with. So anyway, love Gordon. In fact, we might ask Gordo, just see if he can share that photo with us, and we might put it up on our Instagram page because it's worth revisiting. It's a great story. But Gordo put this to us. It's a wonderful thought piece. Can I launch a big issue radical plan? Cut out the Adelaide Cup public holiday and instead have an Adelaide 500 holiday on the Friday. Massively bigger crowd in attendance as it is, and at a wild guess, far more people employed in the motoring industry in Adelaide than horse racing. Soph, you've had no time at all to think about that. What do you reckon?
Well, love this. How long have you had this message for, Hookie? It's Monday night.
6 days. 6 days.
So I love how this is just being thrown on me right now. Normally,
in 6 days ago, I also replied to Gordo. I said, I will put that up as a topic for discussion next week, my man, which I have now done. Yep. Just gave you no warning.
Perfect. It's normally the fair or farces I get no warning, but I love how we're just throwing it out at the top of the show. Look, Ben, it's an interesting comment. Radical is definitely a correct word for it. I don't know if I necessarily agree with it. I do love the Adelaide Cup, and I think it's a great celebration in SA. What are your thoughts? You've had six days.
Yeah, I disagree. I think Gordo, and you might argue that everyone who sells a car is part of the motoring industry, and mm-hmm. I think that's fine. But I reckon there are more people in the racing industry who are actually involved in the either the breeding or the training mm-hmm. or the owning or the strapping or the riding of horses over and above the motor racing industry in South Australia. So I do think it's a bigger industry that employs more people in South Australia, the horse racing industry. Having said that, I do think the Adelaide Cup as a 3,200 metre race belongs in May and not in March. And I think we've got enough holidays in March, haven't we? We sort of get Easter. I don't know that we need another one again. I would prefer to see the March holiday go to May and the Adelaide Cup holiday run then. I don't know that we need a holiday specifically for the Adelaide 500. Gordo will probably write back and give me a bit of a gobful now. And I don't really want to upset him because he's been very good to me historically. However, I disagree.
Yep. Well, I look forward to hearing his text back to you at the next podcast after you've had 6 days to consider that one.
Yes. I'll make sure that I get 6 days to think about it and you get 30 seconds. That's the way we roll. I tell you what, I have given you some opportunity to think about those, Soph, is Sophie Starr.
It's time to see which athletes have been selected this week in Sophie Starr and Ben's Best.
Yeah, look, Cookie, I actually get a bit teary on this one, but I've chosen marathon runner Jess Stenson. Now, Cookie, she just ran at the Sydney Marathon, and I've chosen her not because she won, but because she actually really struggled out there, particularly in the last half of the race. But she was as tough as nails, showed grit, and got herself over that line one place behind Leanne Pompiani, one place in front of Lisa Waitman. And to top that all off, these three girls shared an emotional embrace at the end of the race, celebrating their achievement. And it was truly emotional, particularly after a bit of controversy between Stenson and Waitman in the denial of Waitman in the selection of the fifth Olympic Games. It's the beauty of sport, though. It's something, sometimes finishing is a win, Hookie, and she is my star, Sophie's star of the week. And I've got to say, Stenson, I think she might have beat my co-host by about 7 minutes. Wait, no, 2 hours and 7 minutes.
Oh, as soon as you said Jess Stenson, I thought, I wonder if this is going to get wheeled back to my marathon. All I'll say is this, Soph, is that Jess Stenson said that she really started to struggle with her marathon about an hour and 40 minutes in. I was 3.5 hours before I started to really battle. So I don't know. Maybe she's just not quite as tough as I am. She is incredible, isn't she? Can I just make the point about the Lisa Waitman mm-hmm. issue? Jess Stenson held her head so high with all of that. It was Lisa who was grizzling and complaining, understandably so. I mean, you're trying to get to the Olympics. I get that. Then her husband was firing bullets at poor old Jess, and it would have been very easy for Jess to get into a bit of a mudslinging match. She held her head so high through all of that. She won a wonderful marathon. She was the best placed Australian of the three that started. And all throughout, ever since, she has just been so gracious. When she did her first interview for Channel 7, the host broadcaster of the Sydney Marathon, mm-hmm. the first thing she did was mention her fellow Australians who'd run so well. Mm-hmm. She is just such a wonderful South Australian ambassador. You mentioned that you got a bit teary talking about it. I can understand it because she's just someone we can be nothing but so absolutely proud of for what she's done and the way she's done it, Soph.
Yeah, no, exactly, Hookie. Now, back to you. Ben's Best, who have you chosen?
Yeah, well, I've chosen a kid called Kiana Elliott, who has had an amazing last week. She has won the 2025 Commonwealth Championship in the 58 kilo class of weightlifting. She's this beautiful young woman who I've dealt with quite a bit over the time in my role at the Sunday Mail, and her as this young up-and-coming athlete who moved from Sydney to Adelaide to move with her coach and try and give herself more opportunities. She went and competed at the 2021 Tokyo Games, missed at Paris, and I kind of thought she might be the sort of athlete who that might be enough for her. She'll move on and give it away, go into full-time work. And that happens a bit. You know, we understand that in particular for women, elite sport over a long period of time can get more and more challenging, but she is back with a vengeance. She has dropped an incredible amount of weight. She's gone from the 71 kilo class to the 58 kilo class. Just have a think about that. She's had to drop essentially one-sixth of her body weight and still competing at the elite level. She lifted 100 kilos in the snatch and 112 kilos in the clean and jerk. She's 58 kilos, for goodness sake. Mm-hmm. She's lifting my fridge that's just behind me over here, behind my left shoulder, Soph, doing that at 58 kilos. I mean, I don't need to tell you any more about what she's done because she's actually done it herself. We had a conversation with her only around about 45 minutes ago. We're going to put that up as a special bonus episode. She is by far and away Ben's best for this week. I am that excited that she is back on track. Definitely going to the 2026 Commonwealth Games, and who knows, could very, very well be going to the 2028 Los Angeles Games. On top of that, now we'll go to the World Championships in Oslo, Norway in October. So a true gun, mate.
Yeah, no, excellent choice for Ben's best. She's definitely proven you wrong, Ben. Kiana is just going and reaching new heights. She was also just such a delight to interview, and it's definitely an interview for our listeners to listen to.
So let us get in to Fair or Fast.
Fair or Fast, Sophie and Ben challenge each other with their sporting conundrums.
I have the new ball, and that's because Wallace isn't here to just apportion it out evenly, so I'm just going to take all of the credit and none of the responsibility. Here it is for you. Port Adelaide will not admit it, but they must now go through a serious rebuild. Fair or Fast?
I mean, surely Port have to admit it. They missed finals and it's clearly time for a bit of a rebuild. So I'm going fair here. I mean, inherently, Ken Hinckley is out, right? A new coach, new game plan, Josh Carr. There's 9 spots now through retirements and delisting. It's going to be a very active trading period for Josh. Look, it was their worst year under the Hinckley coaching, I think. Their stats say that. And look, it's well documented that they struggled. I'll give it to them. There was a lot of injuries this year. Stars such as Sam Powell Pepper sat out for injuries for a lot of the year. So look, maybe if those didn't happen, it's a better year for them. But look, I think it's a rebuild for Port for sure.
Completely disagree. I think this is a farce. I actually like Port Adelaide's list. It's not perfect, but it's competitive. They've got a decent, cheap ruck in Jordan Sweet. Butters is an elite midfielder. They've got Rosie and Jason Horne-Francis in there. Georgiadis and Jack Lekosius up forward. Alia down back is the key guy. They've got attacking defenders like Farrell, Jones, Burgoyne. Get everyone on the park. I think they've got a lot of solid roots. Injury aside, they're a decent list. It would be a waste to go nuclear on it now. Fast, they don't need a serious rebuild. They just need a little bit of a touch-up. They'll be all right. I reckon they can make the 8 again next year if they have a crack.
Yeah, good points, Hookie. I do agree. They do have a good core group, but I'm sticking to my guns. Rebuild it is. All right, Hookie. Yesterday we learned Connor Rosie and Jordan Dawson are SA's highest paid AFL footballers. Nobody cares about how much these guys are paid. Fair or farce?
Oh, do we care? Yeah. We care. Of course we care. We care massively. This is the biggest sport in Australia, and any fair assessment of anyone in the competition involves what they're inherently worth. We should know. We should know what they're getting. And in the case of transferred players, we should know who was footing the bill. I mean, I always laugh about Brody Grundy, who is the ruckman at the Sydney Swans. He went from Collingwood to Melbourne to the Sydney Swans. I want to know who's paying the wages of this bloke. So he was on an enormous contract at Collingwood. It got picked up by Melbourne, and then it got handed over to Sydney. Now, he's an All-Australian player this year. Well, he missed out on All-Australian. He's very unlucky, but he was in the All-Australian squad. He's probably on $900,000 to $1 million a year. No one really knows. But imagine if the Sydney Swans are only spending maybe a third of that wage on Brodie Grundy and they've got an All-Australian squad ruckman. I want to know. I think fans like me who pay the wages deserve the disclosure. And I actually reckon so. It probably shouldn't stop there either. Do you know about Champion Data? Champion Data is the organisation that provides this incredible array of statistical information that isn't available to the public. It's only the right holders and major media that get access to it. Why? I mean, I buy KO. I watch the ads on Channel 7. I pay for my footy tickets most of the time, not all the time. So I just reckon that I should have access to Champion Data stats. There are so many people who are very, very statistically minded who could use the information, who deserve it because they invest in the game. And look, while I'm at it, this relates to you and me, right? So imagine that you and I decide that we're going to do Sophie and Hookie's AFLW show or AFL show, and we decide that we want to put it on YouTube. And if we talk about Ebony Marinoff, for example, we want to show some nice vision of Ebony Marinoff. But if we lift that vision and put it up and make money out of it on YouTube, we get copyrighted by the AFL for lifting what is their vision because we don't own the vision. I mean, actually, yes, we do. We pay for it every month. We get hold of it through our Foxtel subscription or whether we watch Channel 7. Now, as long as we don't make a profit out of resharing live matches, I don't understand why it doesn't hurt anyone. I mean, the NBA is a classic example of a sport that is a free-for-all. If you and I decided to do an NBA podcast tomorrow and we decided to show vision of the NBA, we're allowed to use it. No problem at all. The PGA Tour, on the other hand, they hide behind this thing called a DMCA, Digital Millennium Copyright Act. And any people like us who are just trying to promote the sport, they lose access to the vision. They get their credentials revoked because they use that vision. That's kind of the way the AFL is heading. And I think it is completely, completely wrong. I know what you're going to say here. You're going to say you didn't answer the first question. You just wanted to get something off your chest. And you're absolutely right. In fact, I forgot the question, but whatever it is, it's a farce.
Look, I wasn't actually going to say that. I was really enjoying that rant. But you did. Yeah, you did go on a rant. And I was wondering how you're going to tie this one back in. But look, I can kind of see where you're going. I can definitely see where you're going. And look, I actually tend to agree with you. I actually do agree with you. I don't think knowing what they earn changes whether or not I want to watch them. It doesn't, you know, create, you know, if they're earning the big bucks, it doesn't create a desire for me to go out there and want to watch them. But what I do think is interesting is knowing what the club thinks that player is worth. And I think you can kind of tell where the club is leading that team and what path they kind of want to go down. And the only other thing that I would add to your rant is Australians love sport and we do hold our athletes at a very high standard. And I think when you support a club, these athletes in turn represent you. And I think it's kind of important to know how much that club is paying them and how much we should be putting them on that pedestal, or not necessarily, you know, putting them on a throne, but kind of knowing what we should be expecting from them in terms of the club.
It's a fair point. I think the only argument against publicising AFL player wages is that 99% of the people in the media are going to use that as a wedge against the player. Mm-hmm. They're going to say he's on $600,000 a year and he's only got 4 kicks and 3 handballs and 2 marks in this game. And there'll be, you know, all of those arguments. Oh, that's like he got $100,000 a kick for that week. You know, that's ridiculous. It's not quite that much, but you know what I mean? There will be an element that will just use those numbers as a way to denigrate the player. And I'm uncomfortable with that side of it. Mm-hmm. But I think that's sort of part of the swings and roundabouts of these enormous salaries that is driven by the fact that organisations pay huge TV rights, and they pay huge TV rights because we essentially pay the freight, you and I do so. And I think it is incumbent upon the AFL, therefore, to share the information. So, for a couple more to get us out. I love this one that I thought about. Netball Australia's pursuit of a new rights deal featuring the potential for free-to-air coverage is perfect timing for a sport on the rise. Fair or farce?
Let's just appreciate for a second just a slight little pat on the back for yourself. I guess someone's got to do it for you, Ben, so you might as well do it yourself.
I don't get any from you, let's be honest.
Well, yeah, you're right, Ben. It is actually, to be fair, it's an interesting question because early negotiations have started with Netball Australia. Fox Sports, their deal is due to expire. I think it was about a $35 million deal that they had. And look, Netball Australia is looking to return to free-to-air. Look, I think it is good timing. I'm going to say it. I think it's going to expand their audience and make them be able to reach out with the free-to-air scheme. There's been a recent addition of the Silver Ferns during the free agency period, and this has completely strengthened the competition. I know that our Thunderbirds have picked up some Silver Ferns, and that's incredible. The game is building. I think spectatorship is increasing. And look, I think there's something really special if all people can access it for free to air and they can just click on the TV and maybe the netball's playing and they just sit down and start watching it. I think it's a good thing and I think it's good timing.
Hard disagree. This mm-hmm. is a terrible time to be trying to negotiate a rights deal for a sport like netball. They're putting on a brave face, but I fear for their next deal. AFL footy isn't the issue. It's the NRL that is coming for every possible cent that is on the table for sporting rights deals right now. Their current deal expires in 2027. They've currently got 8 games a week because they've got 17 teams. So 16 teams play, 1 team has a bye. They've got the Perth Bears that'll come in 2027 and a Papua New Guinea team that comes in 2028, I beg your pardon. So they'll have 9 games by 2027. They'll be asking for a far bigger piece of the pie. They'll have their hand out. They're already courting DAZN, who are the owners of Fox and KO and the pay TV arm. Mm-hmm. And then they've got this remarkable thing that no one else has in free-to-air coverage, and that's State of Origin. And I can assure you that that will be a massive wedge in any part of new deal for the NRL. So I just ponder this question to you, Soph. Yes, I think it's wonderful that they're trying to get back into the free-to-air market. I think that's really mm-hmm. important for a sport like netball. But how much money is going to be left on the table for a relatively minor sport when the AFL has already done it and the NRL is about to take everything that is on the table, the plates, the knives, the forks, the placemats, the coasters, you name it. Those sports that are just hungry for everything are going to try and take everything off the table. And I'm worried about what's going to be left for netball. And therefore, I worry about, will their best athletes be heading for the footy codes that we've been seeing in the past 10 years? I think it's a terrible time for netball. I really worry for them.
Yep, Hooky, very good argument. Well, let's go straight back to you. Adelaide's teenager, Indy Cotton, has turned his back on a career in elite basketball to sign a Category B rookie with the Crows. The AFL's destruction of other sports for its own gain is out of hand. Fair or farce?
Yeah, I read about this story. Indy Cotton mm-hmm. is the son of Jared Cotton, who's been a big name in SNFL footy, played a little bit of AFL footy, coached Norwood not once but twice, and I've worked quite a bit with the Norwood Football Club, so I know Jared really well, lovely bloke. Know a little bit about his son, star basketballer. He's given that away. He's a Category B rookie for the Crows. This is fair, Soph. A special spot on a list for any athlete pilfered from another sport, I just find it's a bit cheeky. It's not the most egregious thing the AFL does, and I can kind of understand that when you're in the market for talent and you've got a lot of cash, handing young talent money to give up the sport that they're probably better at because you might be able to develop them into something else is a really clever, slightly crafty, slightly cheeky way of going about it. It's a bit of a rocky slope. So yeah, fair. It's probably getting out of hand. I do worry about it. But at the same time, I kind of secretly admire it. And he might end up being a 150-game star for the Adelaide Football Club, Indy Cotton. And you can't argue with the fact that they've gone and ripped him out of basketball when they have done. What do you think?
Yeah, look, it's a very good point that you make. And look, this happens in so many sports. If we turn over to America and we just look at American football, basketball and baseball, I mean, it happens there as well.
Your point is very well made. That is actually something I did not think about. American football does it to Australian football all the time. They mm-hmm. have wonderful arrangements in place that people who would never go to college suddenly end up with college scholarships and getting degrees out of the fact that they can boot a ball 60 yards down a field. So you have identified something that I did not think about. It's a very good point.
Where's Wallace when you need him? And I need a copy of this recording. Oh, my Lord. But look, that is exactly
who knows point. If we've actually got one.
Exactly. This might not be recorded, so it might not be there for me to listen back to. But look, again, and I look at Indy Cotton, and I think inherently there's more opportunity in AFL. It's only played in Australia with 18 teams, 22 players per team, not including the amount on a squad. And look, I don't think it's destroying our sport. It's not damaging it. There's ebbs and flows. Look, I don't think it's getting out of hand. Sorry, Hookie.
No, look, I find it hard to argue with this. So far. I just think it's cheeky. It's not diabolical. But, yeah, in a country like Australia, where you're trying to feed what's ultimately going to be 20 teams, when we mm-hmm. see Tasmania and another team, whether it's out of Canberra or Darwin or whatever it is, a third team out of Perth, and that's probably 10 years away. You've got to find the talent somehow, and mm-hmm. taking it off other sports, if you can't develop them yourselves from a kid, probably makes sense. Well done. Love that. Can I wrap you up with Hookie's Power Rankings for the week?
You can, definitely can. I'm looking forward to it. Are we having 20? Are we having 30? Who knows?
In Hookie's Power Rankings, Ben reviews every state National League team based in South Australia. Perform well, and you're a chance to make the top 10.
Yes, Soph, I understand where you're going, but you'll be pleased to know there's only 10. And what you'll be even more pleased about is that the position 10 team is your old hockey club. The Burnside men's hockey team get in on the strength of the fact that they have won their way through to the major semi-final. So they had the week off last weekend. Seacliff have been the number one ranked team right throughout the year, but Burnside hot on their heels. They get in at number 10 in the power rankings. At number 9 is the Adelaide Hockey Women. I've got a watch on them. They had to come from the quarterfinal, which you know full well. I'm going to get you, you know what we're going to do? We're going to give you a 45-minute explainer of the hockey finals, the way they work. Anyway, Adelaide came from the qualifying final. They're into the first semi. They'll play Port Adelaide. Seacliff and Northeast are in the major semi-final. So that's massive for those two teams. Look, that's super engrossing to me. Northeast, look, if Holly Evans has a fan club, I'm the president. She is like this wonderful veteran, unlucky not to play at the Olympics for the Hockey Roos, but was a Hockey Roos star, has just been the matriarch of South Australian hockey here. So I'm a big Holly Evans fan. She's playing at Northeast. I'm looking forward to seeing them go through from the major semi-final, but I've still got Adelaide as my team to beat. So they're number 9. At number 8, Adelaide Comets, women's NPL team, who have made it through to the grand final. They take on Campbelltown City. I told the story at the start of the episode about how West Adelaide have gone from unbeatable to bounced out in straight sets. Adelaide Comets now the hot favourite there to take out that title at grand finals next weekend. Glenelg men's lacrosse team have won through automatic qualification into the State League men's grand final. They won 14-7 over Brighton. Seacliff Hockey Club are in position 6. They also have a second semi-final against Burnside, who are your mob, in 10th position. So that's this coming weekend. In 5th position, I've got Metro Stars, NPL men's team. They play two-leg semi-finals. Really interesting, the fact that the men's finals are a final 6 with a two-leg home and away semi-final. So they played Adelaide United last week, 1-1-0 away. They've got the home leg this week, so they're in 5th position. Old Collegians are in 4th. They beat Burnside by 5. that was an absolute thriller. That's the closest I think anyone's got to Old Collegians this year in the South Australian rugby competition. This is rugby union we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Third position, Brighton Lacrosse Club, the women. They won 8-4 over Glenelg. They're going for their eighth straight title, Sophie. We've talked about Brighton Lacrosse Club. Incredible. Both the preliminary finals will be so Glenelg versus Woodville and the women, Brighton versus Woodville and the men. So big shout out to what I would regard as my lacrosse club. Never played lacrosse in my life, but I've got a lot of mates who are at the Woodville Lacrosse Club, so good luck to them in their preliminary finals. Number two position in Hookie's Power Rankings are the Sturt Football Club. They were, yes, as we know, they were undefeated in, well, they were defeated in the end in the minor round, so they're through to the second semi-final. They'll take on Glenelg this week, who defeated Crows by 1 point in the SNFL competition, the second semi-final, and the Crows are number one once again ahead of the Pies this Thursday. That's the power ranking, Soap. I only had room for 10 teams for once.
Yep, I like it. You've cut it. It's just the 10 and the mighty Crows at the top. So very proud of you, Ben. Well done.
Sophie, I'm not entirely sure of the record time there, but we are going to get severely clipped from Wallace when he gets this file overnight and realizes that we have just gone way, way, way over time. But I've got to be honest with you. I've had so much fun chatting to you tonight. It's so much fun chatting to you about sport. I love it every time we do it.
I'm loving every moment, Hookie. And you're correct. The listeners can't normally hear, but we have a little beeper when we're going on for too long. And the beeper wasn't here tonight. So we've just had so much fun. But I am looking forward to having Wallace back next week as well.
Yeah, we do need curtailing. Wallace does a very good job of that. Bad luck, Wallace. We missed you. Where's Wallace? We don't know. We will look forward to seeing you next week. Hey, thanks so much for listening, everyone. Enjoyed your company. Enjoyed Sophie's company as well. We'll be back next week with Hooked on Sport. But also make sure you listen to our special bonus episode with Australian weightlifter, the Commonwealth champion, Kiana Elliott. Soph, good night.
Good night to you too, Hookie. Have a good one.
That stumps on another episode of Hooked on Sport. We appreciate you listening and trust you enjoy the show. Help us reach more sports-minded people just like you by following us and leaving a review. We look forward to your company next week on Hooked on Sport.
If you're enjoying this podcast, I'd encourage you to take a listen to Beyond the Club. It's a project I've been working on with Flinders University. Now I co-host it with Professor Sam Elliott, and we break down all the latest research on how to maximise the experience of junior and club athletes. There's a range of resources, special guests, and cutting-edge info on how you can make your club a safer, happier place for your kids and their club mates. Beyond the Club, wherever you get your podcasts.